Welcome to Storybrooke.
Enjoy your stay.
Everyone, and welcome back to Onceable. Today, it's just me and Kristen here to talk about the winter premiere of season 6, and this will be episode 11, Tougher Than the Rest. As always, you can get in touch with us on Twitter at Onceable. We'll be actively engaged once more as season 6 continues on. And you can also comment on this post at hypeable.com. So, since it's just me and Kristen, how you doing, girl?
Pretty good. Pretty good. This episode was good fun and interesting all at once. So,
It's interesting to be recording when the sun is up because this is one of those rare occurrences where we have a screener. And so, we're recording this ahead of tonight's premiere, which is odd. I'm not as tired. I'm a little more awake to record this.
But it works better for you guys because it means we can get it out faster. So at least it won't be like Tuesday or Wednesday.
Don't get used to this though. This is just a treat for the premiere. Yeah.
They will never give us another screener. So just
we will never see another screener again. So this is kind of exciting. All right, so we're into the second half of season 6, and like we've been saying all through the start of season 6, this picks up directly after the events of the winter finale that took place in December. So we're not starting over, we're not starting a new arc here, we're continuing the story. Before we get into that, I just want to hear from Kristen. Is this a thumbs up or thumbs down episode for you?
It's a thumbs up, and there are two reasons why it's a thumbs up. One is August, and two is Old Man Hook.
So great.
Yeah, it's definitely a thumbs up. It can't not be.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to agree. It was a huge thumbs up for me. I watched this episode two or three times, maybe two and a half, because I only watched parts of it again before recording this, but I didn't mind watching it a few times. It felt like a bottle episode, but it also set up the rest of the season, and I'm really looking forward to being back in Storybrooke. Like I was saying, this continuation, before we get into our favorite quotes, because I have a feeling it's going to put us on a little bit of a tangent. Since we're picking up right where we left off, I was just curious how you felt coming back into this episode knowing that we weren't restarting. Did you have any problems like remembering where we left off? Because Once Upon a Time does do a 3-month hiatus. It is a very long time in between episodes, and just wondering what your general impression was coming back in, or if you didn't really feel a shift at all.
Yeah, when I first sat down and like started the screener, I kind of sat back and went, wait, what just happened? Like, what happened the last time I watched Once Upon a Time? It has been 3 very long months since I, you know, really thought about the show. And so as soon as like the last time on pops up, I'm like, oh, yeah. Okay, I remember. Yeah, Emma and Regina found Robin. Okay, Wish World, got it. Like, it all came back to me pretty quickly. I was always a fan of the split season. Like, I didn't mind doing Neverland and then ending up back in Storybrooke, or, you know, the only half of a season I ever really truly hated was Hades and being in the underworld.
Well, who didn't?
Right. That was really the only split season that I absolutely hated. Everything else, you know, there have been bits and pieces that I've at least been able to appreciate. So it never bothered me, but this actually really works. I like that we're still in the same storyline. I like that we're still dealing with Gabriel. Like, we've had this, or Gideon, we've had this, looming vision of Emma's hanging over our heads, and it's still there, but now we know who the person is that's going to end her, so now it's just a matter of getting to that point. So, like, they did kind of have a way to split it. Like, it was who we didn't know who was in the black cloak. Now we know who it is and we're trying to stop them. But it's all the same cohesive storyline, which works really well too. So I'm a fan. If this is how they want to, you know, keep it going, I'm totally fine with this.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I enjoyed the split seasons, like you were saying, where it felt more cohesive. And I didn't like the way we ended Camelot. I loved the whole first half of that season. I thought it was fantastic. But, you know, you're not having to force any wrapping up or setting up for the next season or series arc. So we didn't have to worry about, like, oh, we need to magically build a portal and get everyone out of back to Camelot. There was none of that, and there wasn't any loose ends that they were trying to fix. Instead, we got a bunch of action points that were slowly coming back into play, and, like, you're still thinking about, like, oh, right, X, Y, and Z still needs to be answered, and it brought you back into the story, I think, more organically than just sort of like, oh, we closed one door and we opened another door. Like, forget everything that happened before. We're moving forward. So it's a lot of callbacks, and I like that. We'll discuss that a little bit more, but let's get to our favorite quotes before we go off on a tangent again. Both of our favorite quotes go together, and like Kristen was saying, one of the best parts of this episode was seeing Wish alternate timeline Hook, very old, very heavy. And let's kick it off with yours.
Sure. Yeah. Mine comes from Emma, and it's when she's standing at this magical, you know, enchanted tree with August, and Hook comes up and is threatening them, and she knocks him out. And then she says, wow, I really need to get home and get someone off the rum and the dessert. Like, I just, I mean, that whole sequence was fantastic, and I'm sure we'll get into it and really, like, talk about it, but just, I loved that they had a bit of a sense of humor with Hook. Like, everyone else has pretty much shown to be who they are. Like, we met the Charmings, they're very much the Charmings, and we saw Robin, who is pretty much, you know, like, Robin before he became Robin Hood. Like, it was a version of him, but this version of Hook, man, just genius. Like, I'm glad they had a bit of a sense of humor and were like, yeah, this is what Hook looks like in this Wishverse. Like, this is fantastic.
Yeah, because if you think about it, he probably was under the employ of the Evil Queen for a little bit, but then once she was defeated, he had no one to report to. So he was just living a life of luxury, really. And as you can see, he took to the sea, and he took to the sea hard. So he's a little worse for the wear in this Wish universe. My favorite line is also related. It's when Emma eventually gets back to Storybook and reunites with Killian, and she says, he's like, oh, wait, is everything, what was this other alternate me? And she was just like, no, it's okay. We're just going to be switching to water. And he's like, for drinking?
That's good. Not a beverage. You drink rum. What the hell? Like, it's just so great.
Yeah. And in, like, this moment of, like, grand reunion and everybody being really concerned and stuff, his face is just, like, so perplexed. Like, not even over the fact that Robin is standing in front of him, but over the idea that someone would give up rum for water.
Yeah. Just does not belong in his world. Just no.
So good. So let's talk a little bit about your other favorite part of this episode, which is August. And we kick off this episode with a flashback to when Emma was living on the streets, and she is burning a fairy tale book because she's trying to keep warm. And obviously fairy tales don't mean that much to her. What's the point? She doesn't feel like she's ever going to have a happy ending anyway. And this boy comes over and gets her to stop burning the book and brings her to a police station and gets her help. But before he does that, he talks to her about the story, The Ugly Duckling, and the duckling believed so hard that he could change his fate that he did eventually turn into a swan, and that's what he was always meant to be. Like, he's in charge of his own destiny. And I thought that, you know, it's one of those things where, like, everything in Once Upon a Time is so ridiculous, and this was so simple and beautifully written, and I was so taken aback by it.
It's like, what a way to come back.
I know.
This was the opening scene. There was no, like, we had the previously on, but, like, this was what they brought us back to. It was little baby Emma sitting under a bridge, burning a book, and insert, you know, walks up this guy who at the time I didn't realize was August. I should have known.
Yeah, I didn't either.
But I didn't put it together that that was August until later when we meet grown-up August. And then it kind of dawned on me. I was like, holy cow. And then that whole believing storyline means even more because you see what he meant by the, he believed he was a swan and became a swan. And then you see what she thought about it. She was always a swan, you know, like it's so August's story in that, you know, in the way he reads The Ugly Duckling. And then you get Emma Swan's thoughts about how she sees the story. And it just was like, duh, you idiot. You should have seen it coming. Like, what's wrong with you?
Yeah. And it just made her name makes so much sense, and we're still able this deep into the series to reveal more and more about Emma. So you have her chosen name, which is Swan, that she gives to the child services agent in the police station. And then you have a season and a half ago, we got the story of the jacket. Like, you know, you're slowly building up these or explaining these things that mean something to Emma, and they're all types of armor. So the swan name is what reminds her to keep going and believe that you can be in charge of your own fate and destiny. And then you have the jacket, which is like her protection, and it, you know, it means something more than just a symbol of keeping warm. It's strength, and it's, you know, just being a badass woman. And I really thought that this kicked off, like you were saying, Kristen, kicked off the episode so well. It was nothing like CGI, or you know, you can find these little moments in the series that just take you by surprise, and it doesn't have to be an introduction of another Disney character. It could be something as simple as reminding us that, yeah, August was looking after her the whole time she was growing up.
Yeah, and it makes me wonder if Eddie and Adam have been planning this swan thing forever. Like, I wonder if they knew from the beginning that she chose Swan, or if that was just her name, that it was the name they had envisioned for the Savior, and that's what they were going with. Because for a long time, people were making, like, Swan Princess references, and they really thought that that's how this was going to tie in. I personally love that she, like, chose Swan. We don't know what her name was before that, do we? I mean, we don't know what name she had.
Yeah, I don't think so. I don't even know if she would have known what it was.
She was, I mean, in that scene we saw today, she was probably, what, 10?
Yeah, she was
8 or 10, somewhere in there. So, I mean, prior to that, we've only ever seen her, like, as a baby or as someone too young to know. So who knows if that is ever going to be of any importance? Probably not. But it just, you know, it's such a lovely little detail that I wonder if they've known the whole time that she chose her surname and that it was going to be tied to the Ugly Duckling. Like, is that, you know, have they been planning this for 5 seasons? Because if they have, congratulations. Like, yeah. I didn't see it coming. Or is it just the perfect thing? Like, it's just something that worked in their favor. And, you know, they were just really happy to be able to give this character even more nuance and even more depth than we thought. So just one of those questions that if I ever get them in a room again, it'll be, so did you plan this, or are you just really, really lucky?
And then followed by my infamous, famous question, why?
Why? Just why. Just why.
Let's jump to the why, because the why in question, in case you have enjoyed this 3-month break a little too long, refers obviously to Rumpelstiltskin and Belle. So Gideon is here, and the Rumpel and Belle story, I thought, was actually okay. It was not perfect, but nothing was forced between them. They both kind of have an idea of what they want to do with Gideon, and they're not necessarily in conflict, which I think is an interesting place for them to be, but they're also still not on the same page, and they're talking through this. The final scene between them, I thought, was really, really well done. But I wanted to ask you, Kristen, what did you think of Gideon's reveal for why he wants to kill Emma?
Okay. It surprised me that the way to become a hero is to kill a hero.
Mm-hmm.
That's a little bit, like, that's a little gray area for me. I mean, I guess when you're being raised by the Black Fairy in what I'm assuming was a terrible childhood, this kind of thing probably doesn't feel as gray for him. But it just, there's something about the way he thinks this is going to give him her power and allow him to be a hero and to go back and change things. Like, why not? He clearly has a lot of power already. Like, why not team up with her and both of you go back and, you know, make this place better? Or, you know, there's a lot of people in Storybrooke that have made a difference for other people, and they've all worked, you know, with strangers in the past to fix things. And, like, it just seems weird that he's got his heart set on killing her in order to become a hero himself and become a savior and go save these people that have, you know, been living terrible lives forever. That whole thing just, it doesn't quite sit right. Like, I feel like there's something missing. There's something else in there that he doesn't either understand, and or the Black Fairy has him believing that this is how he gets her power and it's actually going to do terrible things. I don't know. But I feel like there's a piece to this puzzle that we still don't have.
Yeah, I think you bring up a couple of great points. The fact that why doesn't he just take Emma back to this realm and have her fight? I also think that's partially due to the fact that the way that he was raised is not in a very cooperative manner. So we don't really know much about this other realm yet, but I get the feeling that teamwork is not on the table and it's not something he was ever exposed to. So it's the highest power, the Black Fairy, and one person gets an idea, tries to rebel, she kills them. So it's, you know, I think he's a very on the page of this needs to be a one-man show, and the only way that he can see to make it happen, which is to bring down the Black Fairy, I mean, is to get the power of the Savior and become the Savior himself. Now, I'm hoping that this idea crosses the minds of anyone in Storybrooke, because you have Belle, who was kind of just like, let me just talk to him, but I don't think she really knows what she could or would say. Rumpel is sort of like, oh, just kill me and you'll totally get over this angsty childhood upbringing. And then David is like, this is my mistake, he's gonna kill my daughter, I have to kill him. So David's on like a bit of a war path, which is another thing I'd like to unpack a little bit later. You know, Killian is sort of, he feels Belle's plea, but is also facing the idea that this person is going to kill the love of his life. So, you know, there's a push and pull there with what they want to do. It will be interesting to see if they can either talk Gideon into figuring out another way, or if that's even a possibility to get through to him.
Yeah, like, I wasn't entirely certain that this whole aging Gideon up so quickly thing was going to work. Like, I was a little skeptical of it, but I do like the, like, organic feeling that we have to the conflict right now. Like, you know, we know why Gabriel's motivations I keep calling him Gabriel, it's Gideon. Why do I keep doing that? That's freaking me out. Anyway, Gideon's motivations are, like, they make sense. It's mm-hmm. He's not pulling this out of nowhere. It's not some, you know, silly thing that someone did a thing and so now he's determined to kill her. Like, His motivations make total sense. Belle's motivations make total sense. David's motivations make sense. Like, right now, everybody's reason for why they're doing the thing they're doing makes sense. And I can't always say that about Once Upon a Time, but it just, everything feels like there's real stakes here. And I'm really enjoying that so far this season, with the start of this half of the season too. Just, yeah, I like that the stakes are where they are and that everybody kind of feels them.
Yeah, I think the show in its entirety is existing in a gray area, and that's an interesting place for it to be, because for so long, every season, it's been very black and white. We have to stop this villain because this is going to happen. But now it's like, we have to stop this person, but there are multiple ways to stop this person, and they might not actually be that bad, and then there are numerous other consequences that could happen, so we need to, like, pick our path, and it's very complicated, and there's not one answer or one thing that we're working towards. It's not like we're spending this whole season trying to get the sorcerer's hat back. You know, there's so many different directions that this could go. And I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to Once Upon a Time. It's a weird place. I'm excited.
Just cross your fingers. Yeah. It'll stay that way.
Yeah. So, All right. So during the 3-month break, Trainspotting 2 came out, and I have rekindled my love of Robert Carlyle, because Rumpel kind of killed it for a very long time, but I've watched so many interviews, and just, I've really been immersed in. So watching Once Upon a Time come back, I was like, I don't really hate you as much as I did before I went into this press tour binge. So I'm warmed up to Rumpel a little bit, and I even felt that his confrontation with Gideon was okay, even though I think he tried to twist that situation of approaching Gideon and being like, yeah, guess what? We all had sucky childhoods, and I have a lot of problems too. And in order to make me feel better, you need to hit me. Like, that whole scene was just showing how messed up of a person Rumpel is, and how he hasn't dealt with anything that happened with Balefire, because he's pushing all, he just unloaded years of his own childhood and his own bad parenting onto Gideon in that moment, and it just wasn't the right move, and he thought it would help Gideon, but really, once again, unconsciously he's trying to help himself. And I felt I'm having even a hard time saying this. I felt bad for him in that moment, because
spit it out, Brittany. You can say it.
He just doesn't know what to do, and the only way he knows how to do things is making it about him, because he has no empathy. He has zero empathy, and it's painful to watch, because even when he's consciously thinking that he's doing a good thing, he's acting selfishly. And I think he's in a really interesting place, because he knows he doesn't have Belle, but he also knows that he needs Belle to get Gideon back and sort of reset himself. What do you think is going to happen with Rumpel by the end of this season?
I have trouble with Rumpel. I mean, did not have the Robert Carlyle binge that you had. So I still like the character of Rumpelstiltskin. I loved seeing him in the Wishverse and seeing him in full regalia. Like, I still love that side of him, and seeing him in the Enchanted Forest. It's the Mr. Gold side where there's just, he's not a fun character. He's not a character that gives you any sort of joy at any point. Every time we see him, he's working selfishly for something, even if he thinks he has an ulterior motive, like a motive that's not completely selfish, he always ends up making the selfish choice. Mm-hmm. He always ends up doing what's best for him, that's going to get him power. Even when he thinks he's working towards a different goal, he always ends up there. if he, you know, I keep going back to this. I've predicted it like 3 or 4 seasons now, and it hasn't happened yet. But I think the only ending for Rumpel for this series, depending on when they want him out or when he's done, if it's at the end of this season, fine. If it's, you know, 2 seasons from now when the series decides to end, or 3 seasons from now, who knows? I think the ending for Rumpel is him putting someone else first and sacrificing himself. If that's for Gideon at the end of the season, if he gives up his life and his power so that Gideon can have what he needs to, you know, go and save his people or whatever. I don't know exactly what it is yet, but I think that Rumpel at some point is going to have to sacrifice his life and give up his opportunities for power and give up everything for someone else. And that's the only way they're going to be able to actually, like, fully redeem him. I don't think he can bring it back around again. It's just, he's messed up too many times. He's been given too many chances that he's just thrown out the window for a little bit of power or an opportunity to get back at this person or what, you know, insert selfish issue here. So, yeah, I really could see this season ending with Rumpel throwing himself on his sword, or, you know, saving Gideon from becoming a killer of saviors or whatever.
Yeah, and then for my own selfishness, I would like Henry to take over the shop because poor boy needs something to do.
Yeah, I would love that. Henry as the shop. Oh, that would be great. So cute. Yeah, give him a real purpose and a way to meet girls.
Yes.
Yes. Or boys. I don't care.
Whatever he wants. You know, speaking of Henry and a bunch of other plot lines that we still need to return to, and then we'll talk about what happened in the Wishverse and how everyone got back. There are still a bunch of outstanding problems that we need to return to. So one of the big ones is David and Snow are still on their alternating sleep patterns because that curse is still on them. We have the Evil Queen. She's still around, but she's a snake right now. Aladdin still owes people some outstanding wishes, so we have that to deal with. You know, we have to get Jasmine. She wanted to go back to Agrabah. We got a lot of loose ends still floating around the town that aren't directly related to anything that happened in this particular episode. Plus, as a little bit of a segue to get us into the Wishverse, Robin is back. And, you know, how long can that last is another question, because technically he doesn't exist in this timeline. We'll just have to see how that works, because I'm interested to know what's going to happen and if it's going to hurt all over again to get rid of him when the time comes. But the reason that Emma and Regina kick off this episode in the Wishverse is because Robin holds them up and robs them as the portal is open. So he doesn't even care that there's like a portal, open next to them. He's like just interested in taking their jewelry. And as he does, the portal closes and they're trapped. So they need to figure out a way to get back. And I don't know about you, but Emma figuring out how to get back that quickly was so shocking to me. Did you feel the same way?
I had no idea where we were going with this. Like, she looks at the piece of driftwood and is like, I know how we can get back. And I'm like, really? Like, tell me we're not, you know, gonna go farm some more magic beans or something. Like, I could not in my brain come up with any way for them to get back. So as soon as she, you know, they end up with August, I'm still like kind of scratching my head. And then she says, you know, the magic words, the, you know, enchanted wardrobe. And I'm like, oh, okay. All right. This makes sense. Like, I get it. It usually takes a happenstance or a chance that we come up with another way to get back. I kind of love that it was just Emma. She just knew. It just came to her. Or she's thinking about, you know, how can we get out of here? Like, what are ways we do this? And ta-da, she comes up with the idea. Like, I like that it was her solution rather than just, like, we came across this guy who is peddling, you know, magic beans or has mm-hmm. this, you know, talisman that can open portals. Or I like that it was her. She just knew, this is how we can do this.
Yeah, and she also knew, like, it's very in tune with the way this season is working, where it was about her and her past and her origin story. So it was a callback to, oh, how do I get back to the life that I had? Oh, how did I get there in the first place? I got there because my parents put me in a wardrobe. And so, you know, it was just a beautiful connection to how this season as a whole is playing into, well, what is the role of the Savior and what is Emma Swan's origin story? And this is just another piece of that puzzle. It also gives us a little bit more August, which is fun. Mm. It's always fun to hang out with August. And I loved his Wish First character because he was so kind and just genuine and very excited about Princess Emma and, you know, believing in himself. And his smile was just so nice to see all the time. And it was just wonderful. I think that their friendship is something that they should really explore more in the current storyline, because I think it's important to Emma. And this episode was a great reminder of how important they are to each other. He shouldn't be kept in a woodshed writing on his typewriter. He should be more actively involved. And I hope that they find a way to do that.
I agree. I love Eowyn Bailey. I love August. I love everything about this character being around. He's the only one who knows Emma in every facet of her life. He's the only one who knows everything she's been through, like, other than Emma. So it's just nice when she gets an opportunity to, you know, sit down and talk to him or hang out with him, because you know he understands and you know she knows he understands. So he's this equal in her eyes. Like, he's someone that she can really trust to, you know, to listen and to understand, as opposed to all of the other people in her life that are basically there. They're there post-Savior. Like, they're all people who only know her as the Savior. They don't know her as this weak and, you know, lonely little girl who didn't have a family or a home or anything. And I just love the depth that that gives their friendship. I absolutely love August and Emma together. I wish he was a regular part of the show all the time, and I hope that they can find a way to better work him into things, you know, for the rest of this season at least, if not after that. Because, yeah, he brings so much to the show when he's around. And that, you know, happened again this episode, but even between, you know, Wish First August and the actual August, like, it was just nice to see him again and to be reminded of everything that's going on between them, and to know that it was him that handed her, you know, the ugly duckling and that inspired her name and, you know, reminded her that she is a swan and all of that. Like, it's just, yeah, he has such a huge impact on her every time he's involved. I wish he was there all the time.
Mm-hmm. And he's such an important part to how she became the person that she is, which literally we saw in this episode where he inspired her to take the name Swan. So, yeah, I agree completely. He needs to be back. Yeah. But we do, for right now, have Sean McGuire back for a little bit. So we go on this little adventure with Regina, who again is realizing that since she was captured in this other universe, that, you know, everyone felt better off. Everyone was happy. There were no wars. Everyone loved each other and had a good time. So we get to know the problems that she has with this. And she runs off to see, well, is Robin better off without me? Is he better off having never met the evil queen and this other Regina? And it turns out that he's not. But I just wanted to get your overall impression of Wish First Robin, and from start to finish, from when he knows who Regina is, doesn't know who Regina really is until he decides to come back with her.
I loved that they originally made it sound like his life is grand, and yeah, he would have been better off without you, Regina. What are you talking about? And then, like, as things start to go wrong, you kind of see that, no, his life is not great, and he's not the Robin we know and love, and, you know, he still has, I think he still has the potential to get there, but, you know, his life was not what he was making it out to be either, and it really just, it allowed Regina to kind of see that despite him having died, you know, trying to save her, I believe, it's been a long time since we got that whole thing, but, you know, despite all of that and him dying in this current, in the current timeline, his life was still better having known her. I think it's even more important that Regina knows that than him actually returning or any of that, just because she seems to think that everything she touches, you know, like, turns to crap, and that she's, like, the jinx. And she's not. It's, you know, she's making people's lives better. She's making things better now, now that she's not the evil queen, and now that she's, you know, working towards better things. But, you know, it's the rest of the world has to kind of catch up now, and it's slowly getting there. I will say, when it comes to the whole Robin coming back thing, which I know we're kind of there, I love the kind of callback to Emma bringing Marion back and it totally changing and ruining Regina's life, to Emma saying, make your own fate, her bringing Robin back, like Regina being the one to bring Robin back. And now I'm interested to see whether this will be like the fix, like whether Robin and Regina, this Robin and Regina, can find a way to, you know, look past the fact that she was in love with a different incarnation of this person, or whether their relationship will ever progress, or if he'll be around for a while, or if he'll, you know, die in a very similar fashion in two episodes. I don't know. But I loved the juxtaposition and the callback to the Emma Marion storyline and how that affected Regina. And now Emma being like, do this for yourself, like change your fate, make your decision and, you know, take life, you know, by the reins and pull it wherever you want it to go.
Yeah, that's a great point. And it actually made me think of a theory of something that could potentially happen, which is if for some reason, which, like you were saying with Marion, it became one of those, like, not meant for this world type of situations, because, you know, Marion ended up being Zelina, and that's a whole nother barrel of monkeys that we're not opening right now. Just the fact that he isn't really meant for this world, and that could become a problem later on. And if he really does need to go, and he isn't the same person, or he isn't providing anything to Regina that is helpful, or, you know, or it's just hurting her more, perhaps he can take the worst of himself and kill the worst of herself, and we get rid of the evil queen and Robin at the same time. And it's such a beautiful sacrifice, because he just wants the purest Regina to exist, even though I love Evil Queen Regina. Sometimes she's a bit of a headache.
Yeah, that would be awesome. I can see that, and that would give alternate Robin a reason to be there. Not mm-hmm. just, you know, Regina brought him back. Like, she brought him back, but there kind of is a purpose for his existence now. Not just, you know, we wanted Robin back in the show, so he's back. Like, I would love it if that kind of worked out. Okay, now I'm crossing my fingers.
Yeah, and you also, the way you phrased it was so perfect, with her being in charge of her own fate and future, and she made the decision to bring him back, and that decision could possibly give her that happy ending. It won't be with Robin, but it will be her completely free of that tie to the world that was not so great when the evil queen was around. So it could give her that life that she wants. So we don't know. It'll be exciting. I think that pretty much covers everything that happened. except for the fact that Hottingham was back. Oof.
Love my God.
Me some Sheriff of Nottingham.
I mean, between Sean Maguire and Hook and Hottingham, like, it was a great episode.
Oh, yeah. A lot of good looking guys around.
And August too, just yeah. All in one episode. Thanks, guys.
It was wonderful. And yeah, so since we're recording this before the episode has officially aired, we don't have a trailer for Murder Most Foul, which will be taking place next week. But I did pull up the synopsis, so here we go. This is really exciting. Before Hook takes the next step in his relationship with Emma, he wants to make sure David sees him as more than just a pirate. So when David asks Hook to help him uncover the truth about his father's death, Hook agrees. Meanwhile, Regina works to acclimate Robin to life in Storybrooke, but soon discovers he has a dark side that makes the task much more complicated than she anticipated.
Okay, I'm really looking forward to next week.
I don't even need any visuals. I'm in.
I mean, the Hook-David relationship has been, like, fun. There have been moments where, you know, you've kind of said, like, oh, I love it when they're boys and when they get to, you know, be boys and all of that fun, you know, bonding and all of that. They've played around with that. But, man, I'm really excited.
Yeah, and I forgot all about the David and his father storyline, so that's another thing that's a loose end that we're going to explore. I mean, poor Snow, she's getting a lot of rest.
I mean, yeah. Well, and that was the other thing, when he was like, I will not, you know, wake Snow until I have solved this, and I'm like, you're going to need a lot of coffee.
Not only you're going to have to deal with a very angry person when she wakes up and 3 weeks have gone by.
Right. Like, he's going to have to stay awake all that time. Like, you lose a bit of your brain and your mind. Like, you lose your sharpness the longer you're awake. So I'm like, this could get messy. Okay. good luck. Yeah. Snow is not going to be, she's not going to be happy to have been kept in the dark quite so long.
Yeah, well, he doesn't care. He's not going to actually get yelled at because he won't be awake to hear it.
And they're the Charmings, so, you know. I could see her recording a little video of, like, lecturing David and, like, giving Emma or Hook, like, directions, like, make him watch this.
Yeah.
Like, this is important. And then David wakes up and he's like, yeah, I'm not watching. I don't need to get yelled at. This is the only perk to this situation.
Oh, boy.
So she can't yell at me.
Well, that wraps up the premiere of mid-season 6, and we'll be back on track with hopefully some more of our regular voices and maybe a few new voices joining us on Onceable for the rest of season 6. And I hope you stick around, because I'm sure we're going to have some very, very colorful commentary when we finally hit that musical episode at the end of the season.
Oh, boy. Sigh.
Oof. All right. We'll leave that for another time. So until next week, I'm Brittany.
And I'm Kristen.
Bye.
Bye.